Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Practical Projects Update, possibly number 2, where I give an account of practical projects which I'm working on in parallel with the Podmation, which is the software front of producing podcasts and automatic lessons. And this is taking a fair amount of work to get going, and in general it's in a fairly boring stage. This is the Podmation, in which I've got the structure of the software there. I just have to get the actual podcasts flowing through and lessons flowing through, which requires sort of some structural work. So besides this, there's the sort of social work, realizing that you don't have necessarily a network of friends or anything to actually get anything through or up and running, any support to get projects up and going. So you have to sort of look at reducing things down to the very most fundamental components and actually just moving one thing forward at a time. So the practical projects have broken into two areas. One is the production of an Einstein pendulum, which I've got up to a certain stage. And I'll report on that just very briefly. So an Einstein pendulum requires you to actually apply a magnetic field until a saturation point. So what happens normally if you have a piece of ferrite in a magnetic field, the number of electrons which change their magnetization is proportional to the field up to a certain point, saturation. So essentially what you want to do is have the field, the strongest field possible, flip back and forward. Now, now when this flips back and forward, this flipping of the spin of the electron also flips the angular momentum, which gives the pendulum a little kick. So if you can imagine a, I don't know, something which is fairly similar to this, is would be a nail dangling on a string, or a fish on a string. The fish will rotate. That spinning pendulum fact is a, this beautiful scene. I love seeing people relaxing and speaking as families. As this is as I'm walking through. I should give you a background that I'm just conducting my cardiac walks. I've got to really, I suppose, focus on cardiac fitness and also losing weight. So reducing the amount that I eat and increasing the amount of exercise, or the level of exercise I do each day to get things under control. Now, of course, in the Christmas thing, you have people pushing food at you all the time. But getting back to this, the idea is to build an Einstein's pendulum. This is, you have a magnetic field change on this pendulum, and the pendulum has electrons in it, and the electrons, the greater the magnetic field, the greater the push. So the idea is that you try and create a fairly strong magnetic field for the components. Now, the interesting thing is that this, I don't know, has a dimension which comes out of it. That is, the longer and thinner you can make this, the better, for several reasons. One is that it's just the strength of magnetic field. It's not the at one point, and the fact that it's in a ferromagnetic or a responsive medium means that the magnetic field lines are held within it. So if you can build up the magnetic field at one point, that magnetic field will continue right throughout that device. It's the strength of the field, and you need actually quite a strong field to actually saturate something, that means that the strength of the push really is proportional to the feel that you can offer. So that basically going through, you want a sort of a high current source, which you can provide, and then to flip its the direction. So when it's little pendulum is rotating to a particular point, its extreme point, you want to flip the current such that it pushes it the opposite direction. So for this, you want a stronger magnetic field as you can muster sensibly. But also, there's some other factors there that any magnetic dipole in a magnetic field gradient will feel a force. And so if you've got a dipole in this sort of magnetic field gradient, your pendulum will sway either side to the more intense magnetic field. So it'll go from weak to strong magnetic field. So if you haven't got everything absolutely perfectly aligned, you're going to tug your pendulum from left to right. That is, you either get a uniform magnetic field, which to get uniform is you make it fairly large. And the larger you make it, the greater the greater the energy you have to put into it. Simply, you've got ohmic or resistance. So it's larger, the amount of wire resistance goes up as, just trying to think, probably the square root of the area. So it's just the number of turns times the current going into it. So, basically you can either make something very large, or you can actually, get the actual same amount wound around the actual ferrite core itself. That way you don't have to worry about instability. The ferrite will push against the solenoid. So if the wire is wound directly around the ferrite, it'll push push there, but this is it's rather complicated to get the wire into the core and out of the core. What you have to do is you have to put ingoing wires, and so the wires are flexible. You have to actually coil the wires as you're going in, then coil it around several times, and then coil it out. I think that can be done too. I think that will be my a secondary approach, but that's where the Einstein pendulum is going. And essentially, I've got to get a friend in to see if they can help me drive the relay. We'll have a go this time. At a certain point, I will see if I can organise a roadshow and show the sort of concept model of my Einstein pendulum to see if we can get it to work in the reasoning behind a PowerPoint presentation as we go across. Sorry, there's someone walking home from the station at night, obviously from a trip. I'm going for my walk. So this is my push along the Einstein pendulum, and it's just basically getting some space. So we've got a lot of people over for Christmas, and so there's actually physically no space for me there. My desk and study has been filled with relatives. The small area which I had aside for a few personal toiletries has been taken up, and guinea pigs have moved inside. The reason that this has come is that the temperature's getting up to the 30s and 40s each day, and so elderly or beloved pets have to come inside. For all this type of reason, I have had to sort of suspend the work on the Einstein pendulum. Now, just let's get back to the Einstein pendulum. why it is important is it's an essential piece in which you can see current going into a device, and the device starts to move, and for it to move, I've got trying to get a very small picture of Einstein's face imaged underneath a microscope held by this pendulum, and watch the face move just ever so small with the force of the current on it. Something I think I can get going. Now the reason is that the explanation of this seems quite obvious. I think one of my surprising things is that when people see wires going into something, they expect movement, because their understanding is so poor, they don't know that wires move in magnetic fields, or how wires move magnetic fields. So it seems very natural. One of the surprising things is that it seems very natural. And really, this is for people who do understand, the Einstein pendulum is actually leveraging off the universe. The angular momentum of the universe is pushing. So in general, if you push yourself around a merry-go-round, you push yourself against the surface of the Earth. And in this one, it's a very deep, deep point to consider. And I think the major point that it takes us up is the fundamental quandary. It takes us up to a schism point that we have people who have so much amazing technology, mobile phones, internet around them. Anything doesn't really hold fascination for them. So this is, you know, an important point to see if people can see the Einstein pendulum, understand it, and open up the discussion with them. So I think I've got a set of points to put forward on that. So that's one practical project. I have another series of practical projects of identifying effects for which you can observe it and make a reasoned guess, and something very simple to look at, but it pushes you into questioning quantum mechanics and things of that nature. I suppose we really want to actually explore that, move away from the I was trying to think of a word for it. It's the word I'm obviously reading, zombie myths, but there is a certain aspect. I'm just looking at this, yet another ant colony coming out as I walk past. Sorry about this, as I'm going to ask. But look, there is this fundamental thing that there's this potent mix of Australian society going in a particular direction. It's sort of maintained a momentum of power and balance. The power and balance, the major thing it has to do is, because it's got no functional driving force, one of the things it has to do is maintain its power and balance as a central tenet of its belief. And then that means that the circuit of getting information externally can't happen. The information has to actually enter the internal system, be cleansed of any aspect of which would upset the power imbalance theory for what's going on. That's just my view at this point in time, and I'm not saying that is some person wanting to change it or feeling outside it. It's just that observation that content that you look at doesn't go in, and trying to work out why it doesn't go in, you know, you now have a huge variety given that all content can't go in, you can now pick out the key content, which has the spell-breaking nature of it. The spell being that things have to support power imbalance, and so the information going into a closed power imbalance system must support that power imbalance as a primary thing. So you can't, when you have information, you can't present it in such a way that it will threaten power imbalance until it's all over Red Rover. And so hopefully that's the objective, is to quietly build this over a period of time, this Einstein pendulum. And I've got a camera now, so I should be able to photograph this and put up on the website the level that I'm going to. So there's a class, as I said, there's a class of fundamental experiments, which really demonstrate this. And it's sort of making me think about a few other experiments. Now we've actually really reached a phase now where there is actually very little that interface that people have with equipment. So the obvious seeing my son build one of my sons build a computer, and the actual components are now microscopically small. You almost need definitely a high-powered magnifying glass to actually see the tracks, and the actual power supply wires are actually thinning down as the power consumption is going down. It's getting a lot more thin. This is the most recent build of computers, but so people's it is a strange world that we're looking at, that amount of information that people need is different. Their ability to understand is reduced. It's a very complex world that we're getting into. Getting on to the second practical thing. So I've got two practical things to cover in this walk. This is in this, and then a second podcast is the PETA meter, PETA meter. It's 10 to the 15 meters, or a trillion kilometers. I have a system of scales, which, now it's hard to say that I haven't written this up, but I've realized that there is a sort of a natural writing of scales, and I've called it a convenience scale, C minus one. So C minus one is that things are made a billion times bigger. C naught is the same size. C one, it's one to a billion. C two, it's one to a trillion, which is the C two scale, which where the petameter comes in place. Because a kilometer is 10 to the 3 meters, and a trillion is 10 to the 12. So you add the two together and you get a PM. So where you've got a lowercase k and m for kilometers, this is a capital letter P and M. So when you write this, you've got the petameter. And the peta seems to be the magic scale. And this is probably a superior unit of measure into light years, because people, it's more direct. You know, it's just a trillion times more. So that's C2. This is C3 and C4. By C4, the universe is a scale in which the universe is sort of a large 96 millimeter cross ball. So what would you call it? It's a kiddies baby's soccer ball. There's sort of no ball really of that size, sporting ball of that size. It's 95 or 96 millimeters across. C4, but this is C2, which is the trillion to one scale. Can you see how much it's easier by having a C naught, C minus one naught, 1, 2, 3, and 4 way? It means that it's a cognitively easy to pick. And the advantage of C2 is that you can map scale positions petameter to kilometer. So you can actually put your model so many kilometers away, and that will be the distance in petameters. So there's a plan to go through. So what I'm looking at the moment is a realization that I want to really understand why things aren't working, and to actually slow things down, look at individual interactions and try and work out why nothing gets through. And I've had a few people sort of as wing people come in and come through, and they come away a bit staggered that some of these inventions or ideas simply can't get through. People will go through and look at a particular thing, and there is an art for getting this through. So there's this generalized theory, as there's one thing which is very much the former thing, which is the Einstein pendulum, is something which looks accessible but isn't, and is a way of attaching ideas, building ideas together into a unit which can eventually go forward. Given that conventional approaches are closed, I have to eventually work forward on this, given that all these things are shut down. That's one aspect. Then there's, if you can imagine, there's something which is held internally, and you're in your world, and you look into the science world, and there is, it's not something inaccessible or magical, like an iPhone or something like that, which is something you buy, a product you could buy. This is something that you might understand, something, a simple thing, rocking a pendulum, you might be able to understand it. But the important thing is that it's a phenomena which you don't expect to see. Now, to get in going across here. Now, the other thing is, this is another practical project in which we're building a model which is not a one-on-one experience. It's just sitting out there as a net to catch as many people as possible. And so for this model, you build a scale, 1 to a trillion, or C2 scale, local galactic area. Now for this, you have the model of the Sun, and of course the model of the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, is 41 petameters, or at this, in our C0 scale, but in this change scale of a C2 scale, is 41 kilometers away. And so we have this way of doing it. So we have this fundamental thing that we're working on, which is you've got the scale for people to work out. It's got to fit in with the narrative. So it's rather convenient that there's two intersection points for the narrative. One is that Glenbrook's the home of a number of scale models. That's the main characteristic of the Glenbrook Visitors Information Center. There's a number of scale models of what's going up, or highly conceptual models, artistic in a certain way, models of what's going up. But the second aspect of it is merchandising or connection. So merchandising, connection, alignment. And so by actually placing astronomical features at points that of low significance in the mountains, you create additional tourist attractions. So essentially placing the Blue Mountains, a scale model of Alpha Centauri, is a very worthwhile thing to do. Now, in order to give a signpost of where that is, you will have to actually put, and there's all these unusual things that you can tag, and this is the creation of a traffic or a roadside distance sign. So what I'll do, so this roadside distance sign is something which looks incredibly familiar, but instead of having KM, it's got PM. Instead of locations, it's got star names. And the stars, there's four stars. Alpha Centauri means the first of the centaur. Then there's Sirius, which comes from, I think, the Greek for scorching hot star. So this is the brightest star, the dog star. And the interesting thing about Sirius, we'll go back onto interesting things. Well, I'll just tell you first how I've built this, and I'll put it up on the website for you to, the blog for you to have a look at. So I have to produce a sign, and this is really good for me cognitively, because I've got to look, observe, compute, and stuff like that. Now, one of the things that instantly struck me going to Victoria is, as opposed to New South Wales, for their traffic signs, their traffic lights have the rim of the, you know, your red, amber, green lights. Green, I think green's at the top, is it? Yeah, green's at the top. But that's black. And so in Victoria, that's completely black except for the lights. In New South Wales, there's just a white rim on the outside of it. And of course, when you're rebooting, you sort of keep on pushing yourself to note these things. And so for me, it's been a good cognitive exercise to actually note the colour. So I'll describe how I've built this this sign. So what I do is I pull up a series of Australian signs, road distance signs, and have a look at the characteristics. One is the shape, which is obviously rectangular with a curved edge, and it has a white, it's green of a certain colour, and it's got a white border, sort of a certain thickness, and rounded corners. So you can build this directly with this spectacular Christmas tree light thing up here. So this is actually a beautiful little house and beautiful garden. I'm just going to watch it for a little while as I walk past. It's an absolutely beautiful colour. I wish I could describe it to you. But aside, so we've got these street things. So what you do is you set this up, you set the white up. To get the green, you actually, the right shade of green, you there's a paste. This is, again, I should have it. It's light, not light burner, light, oh, it's light something or other. It's print screen, and you have the right application. It, the screen goes sort of smoked, sort of darkened, and you can select an area. And so you Google search these images, and what you do is you cut the image and plug it into your PowerPoint. Then for your PowerPoint, you fill your respective shapes with a colour which you ink drop from the actual road signs. So this is our first overall tip, is to get the colouring right, dimensions right. Now, I haven't actually fully followed the actual strict dimensions of the radiuses at the corner. I've made mine slightly larger, simply because I think visually just visually looks right. I think I've got mine twice as large as the normal one. But to get the colours, you get an actual sign, and for the actual colours of the yellow and the white and the green, you can just ink drop them. So that just makes it completely authentic. Then setting out, for the actual designation of the road, I've had to, generally it's an A1 or C or B, something like 25 or something like that. But I've decided that I'll make the road that we're talking about C2. That means the road, you can translate as to a C2 scale. So I sort of rather like that. And you can put that up as a C2. So the road signs are a particular direction. Now, in Australia, though, that yellow C2 or A1, we put it in a white square. Now, visually, that's a bit, a bit busy. So I've left the white square out for a moment. And then there's the actual domestic name of the road that you're on. So that might be Great Western Highway or something like that, or Newell Highway. And so it'll be a white box, slightly rounded at the corner, so I had to actually get the slightly rounded, and the font there. Now, immediately, once I studied the font, I could see, well, there's no font out there. And as we were driving along today, I sort of looked out and coming up to here with this various font. Now, what Australia does, which the rest of the world doesn't do, is that we have place values for the distances. So the ones line up, then the tens, and then the up to the thousands line up in kilometres. And we don't have the number of kilometres, but here we've got to add picometres, petameters, not P metres, but petameters. I'm just having a look here at this, the sign in the dark here, so if I can see it here. And yeah, look, indeed, I think I've got the font. Is that Sather G? So I've got the font here. There's no Blue Mountains National Park, Jellybean Pool, Euroka, Red Hands Cave, and we've got the distances here, the curvature. I'm just looking at a sign right here, and just looking at what it says. So it's laid out in a particular way. Again, looking at the font is a dead giveaway. Now, the interesting thing is that it's localities is capitalized the first letter, and then lower letters. I'm watching it here, but something here, it says park use fees apply. If it's not a locality but instruction, it's all in capitals. And the spacing is here, and looking at it, and it's sort of a natural orientation here. I've got my curvature a little bit beyond it. But looking along here is that you begin to really notice the font once you sort of look at it and say, oh, I've got to rip this off. So it's got, I'll go through the stars a bit later on. It looks as though I'll be able to walk down to the causeway here. You'll probably hear, I'll be probably drowned out by frogs because it has rained recently. It's quite hot. And you begin to hear bugs and frogs around me. So I'm just walking here into the national park. As your brain switches on, you start seeing all these things. I was just trying to think what I saw. Yeah, So as my brain's switching on, I'm picking up more and more as I see a TV program. So hopefully all this effort is just rebuilding the neural pathways which have been knocked out in my brain at some stage. So we're looking at this thing here. And so you get the general idea. So rather than neural highway, I've put it local Milky Way, put it up there, and that's in black of a certain font, just going back and forth, checking it's all okay. And then this Alpha Centauri, I don't know, Cirrus, Betelgeuse, and Rigel. So I'll just talk about these a bit later on, but I'll just talk about getting this absolutely correct. And I began to look through all the fonts. There's heaps and heaps and heaps of fonts there, but the critical thing is that the tops of the L's and the H's and the bottoms of the P's have a slightly chiselled, they've got like a roof on them. It's not a square thing, and so that, I don't know how it works. It looks really good visually. It's just this font that they have on road signs, and you don't realize it until you actually look at it. And of course, people think you're autistic because you're suddenly looking at these sorts of things. Obviously, I'm in here looking, I'm walking up to past other road signs, and again, it's all capitals for instructions, but a location is written in various directions. I don't know how they go here. So I had a bit of a thing. Obviously, I'm going to have to create my own font to look at it. Then I looked up on the internet road fonts, road sign fonts. Comes up, gives you a series of them for free. Look at them, and there's one which I've forgotten what the name of it is. Pick that, and then there's a process of it, which is quite simple. You download it, you unzip it, you click on it, you install it. But what you have to do is you have to restart your PowerPoint for that font to appear. That font magically appears, then you apply it and paint it. And that suddenly it's not the Australian font, it's not fully the Australian font, but it has everything correct. I was struggling to get the C2 correct from around the place. And it has just the right thing for long-range visibility. So it's a font designed to be read at a distance, and of course it really sticks out. So to go around it here, that's right. Alpha Centauri is 41 petameters. Cirrus, the scorched star, is 81 petameters. So that's the brightest star in the sky. And there's a series of stories behind here. Betelgeuse, which is the only single star out there, okay, so more than half the stars in the sky are two-star systems. So this is some of the value you get out of it. Betelgeuse is out there, and that's at 6,000 petameters. So in this scale thing, I've put that up in somewhere in the Philippines. I haven't worked out where I'm going to put the, Rigel. So Rigel's the first one. So let's start to go through these stars. So Rigel's at around 8,100 petameters. So if you convert that into kilometers, so the idea is that I've got this scale picture, and I've got this process that no matter how hard I try, I'm at this position where my social capital's burnt out and I don't have any way to start up. So it really doesn't matter if someone else starts up, I can sort of say, oh, look, point to that, and say, well, this is an idea here. Now, I have written, Australia does have someone who's called and officially paid astronomer at large. And this is the public's communication person for astronomy. And it's Fred, forgotten his name. Oh, my God, talking about that, it's right up above me, beautifully in the night sky above me. Is some of my favourite, all my favourite stars. The stars that I'm talking about, there's Taurus, the bull, with a red giant horn. I think that's, I've got the name of that. I keep on forgetting the name of that star. There's the Pleiades, or the Seven Sisters, or the Little Dipper. Then there's the Big Dipper, or Orion. And there's Orion's the hunter, and his dog called Cirrus. And so you can see all the way up there, there's a series of stars up here. You can see Cirrus, Betelgeuse, and Rigel up there. And, of course, the Pleiades, which is an open cluster, which I absolutely adore Pleiades. It's such a pleasant star, a pleasant star system to look at. So it's right up there, and Cirrus is the brightest star, so you can automatically see it and see these other stars. So you've got Alpha Centauri, which is in this, you can only see Alpha Centauri, sorry, people from the southern hemisphere. And the idea is to, once we get this up, to lock in the idea and do a little bit of merchandising, a little bit of cross promotion. So it's sort of, so like in the idea is that, the Einstein pendulum, things focus in and stop there and then move out. This one's a much more expansive lens to look at a whole lot of other different things. Let's talk about these stars. Alpha Centauri is actually three stars. Alpha Centauri A, Alpha Centauri B, and Alpha Centauri C. So Alpha Centauri appears at one star. Now, the Alpha Centauri C is Alpha Centauri Proxima. It's actually close to us, and it's closer to 40 p.m. to us. It's at a distance. And then Alpha Centauri B and C orbit each other. One's about 25% bigger than our Sun. The huge thing is that the Sun only has to be a little bit bigger, and because it's a little bit bigger, or like Alpha Centauri A has to be a little bit bigger, it's significantly brighter. It's 25% bigger and twice as bright as our Sun, just roughly. I can't really remember it there. Now, there's some other problems. Is that if a star is bright, that's not the major problem. Once a star goes to a certain brightness, it then has runaway brightness. So our Sun, theoretically, has it burns that fuel at its current, that's the rate it's been burning, it will have, you know, I don't know, 50 billion years, 100 billion years ahead of it. It's only got 5 billion years in front of it. So what happens is there's something called a CNO cycle. So you get triple alpha produces some carbon. Some of the carbon then absorbs a proton and becomes a nitrogen, then that builds up and then forms an oxygen 15. So it's CNO, but not full proper O. The oxygen gets burnt up again to form a carbon cycle. It produces CNO, which is a cycle, and helium. So the protons come in, fuse, and out comes a helium process. But this process is a far more aggressive process. And so your Sun becomes unstable and starts to heat up and burn. So our Sun will produce more energy at a lower temperature. If you get that, well, first of all, will produce more energy at a higher temperature. The temperature will increase, and then the temperature will decrease. But it's its volume will increase. Well, that's our sun. So Alpha Centauri is a three-star system at 41 kilometers, and the other two stars in the model that I'm aiming for is between 3 and 5 meters, depending what year it is, and they're all cashew style. To, you know, our sun is a 1. Oh gosh, I just read it today. 1.4 millimeter bell bearing. Alpha Centauri A is 1.7. The other one's say 0.9 and 0.3. Yeah, roughly. And C is 1 kilometer away, but the other ones are just 5 meters away. Whereas as they orbit each other in space. So your star neighbor is a three component one, and so I can imagine a little book with a distance, a guide to finding that. Now that's Alpha Centauri. Then Sirius. Sirius is a twin star system. Not one star, twin stars. It's got a white... now, the interesting thing about this is that Sirius in ancient times is a very bright white star. In ancient times, they recorded... And I find this impossible to believe. But in ancient times, it was recorded as a reddish star. So its colour has changed. And it's... so our entire... like if you can imagine we're peas in a pan, the suns are moving all over the place, and of course the further suns are still moving but they're further away. So Sirius is a very bright star, is moving really quick, and so it is the brightest star in the sky simply because it's moving so close to us, but it's going to move further away and dim. And I think from ancient records, people were beginning to work out already that the stars are moving. So that star will move, you know, in the process, like it's moving fairly rapidly. 10,000 years, it's on the move. And I think a lot of the mystery of the pyramids was, yeah, they were lined up perfectly to the position of stars 5,000 years ago. But the stars have moved that little bit. And it's really interesting to see animation of the night sky, things move with time. So Sirius means means scorcher. Yeah, that's Centaurus, well, yeah, bull centaur, you know, Harry Potter, you like that type of stuff. Scorcher. Yeah, that's like an even Australian would say. Yeah. I'm sure they would say we had to come up with a name for a fairy, a Sydney ferry, and there's a competition, and it came up with Boaty McBoatface. So what we would do is come up with the name of a star, so it would be Starry McStarface. But Scorcher is a lovely name, and Sirius means Scorcher, you know, hot one. So I don't know whether they saw it. Sirius is a combination of stars. It's got a little white dwarf star, which is a dead remnant. So it would have supernovaed, I don't know, but some time, not probably even human history. Yeah, it's not a long time ago. But if the other one supernovas were, you know, in like it's sufficiently close, 8.1, which is really, or 81 petameters. So just to give you an idea, it's 9.5. petameters, I think 9.5 petameters is a light year, so it's, you know, a bit over 8, you know, getting up to 9 light years away. So if that one supernovas, I think we might be in a bit of problems. You know, it would definitely affect us. And this is the entire thing, is our during the time we have suns come really close to us and they could explode. Like, it's a pretty scary thing being in this local group. So that's Sirius, two stars. So Alpha Centauri, three stars. So position, Cirrus, be two stars. Now, the poor little people, I've got a Philippines village put out to host this. And then the next one is Betelgeuse. So, Cirrus is the dog, Canis star, the hunter's dog. It's a really nice, sort of like I like the idea of Alpha Centauri, because everyone knows about Alpha Centauri. The next one is, it's all in one plot and star, the sky, and it's fairly easy. I think, you know, it'd be rather sad if people can't identify it. So Betelgeuse is a red giant. So it's a massively bright red star. So it's cool because it's red, but it's bright. It's putting out more energy. And on the scale of our sun, it's 1 millimeter across. This is 1.2 meters across. Joseph, it's huge. I hate walking through spider webs at night. So right across here, because if a spider web is actually going across a road, you know it's a pretty big spider, and you can feel these high tension webs. So it's like if it's a sort of a small spider that's got a low tension web, you feel this is high tension. You realize that this spider is a big spider, but there's no worry about that. Now, that being said, I can see up here the Southern Cross, I can actually see Alpha Centauri, you little beaut. Slightly yellowy star, a little brighter of the two. Little yellow star twinkling at this point near the horizon, the Southern Cross. So Betelgeuse. You've got to understand that when Europe was just in just complete turmoil, and the Arab astronomies came up, and the name for this is a hunter. Betelgeuse is a red star, and it's a giant, and it's actually not spherical. It's a bit like a space cabbage up there. All these beautiful things you can put out there. So in this one road sign, we've got all this going across. It's in petameters. I like petameters because it's named after me, Petakil, petameters, petameters. A Betelgeuse is 6,079. Remember that now. Did I mention that going back over this, the conversion of this, picking out this font, I just put it on the road font, and it just, there's this sort of relief, visual release as you look at that. That, my friend, is a road sign. It looks so, it could be a real road sign. Once I get the font, it's a serious thing, so I'll put this up. So Betelgeuse is up there, 6,000, and it means, right, it's Arab, and this person, it's a hunter, so it's a hunter there, and the star lines join the dots, a star pattern is a join the dots, so amazing, I'll be able to, I'm going to walk across for a big thing, I'm going to walk up. Now, the problem here, I should explain, is that I'm going to walk up this slope, and I'll walk up slowly, but it's still going to be a massive effort to get up. So I've walked down into a canyon, and it's beautifully quiet here. The air is still. So we've got Betelgeuse, and this is a big thing. So our nearest neighbour is 3 stars. Next is 2 stars and White Dwarf. It's sort of really getting into it. And Cirrus is not going to last long. So you've got all the story coming along. Next one up is Betelgeuse. So you see Cirrus and it's the next bright star, which for us is downwards. But for you in the Northern Hemisphere, it's upwards. There's a reddish star around the Big Dipper. Around there, so you look at, and also it's interesting in the Big Dipper, if you look at even under binos, you can see these nebula. But let's stop for a while here and talk about Betelgeuse. So it's a large space cabbage, 6,079 petameters away. The road sign says that. And it's Arabic for Orion. I don't know where Orion came from. But Betelgeuse actually is the Arabic. Now, I must admit, Betelgeuse, for me, when I was a kid, I'm looking up Betelgeuse at the moment, was a romantic star because it was the sort of pink-red star. So if you wanted to, you know, have a star to give to anyone, you'd give them that star. For various things, I gave various stars to my kids as I came along. So it's up there. It was very easy to see. It's easy to see Sirius, and then you look up through. So if you put a line up through the centre of the pan of Sirius, Orion's belt, go right across and you go to Rigel. So Betelgeuse is the Arabic for armpit. Yeah, it's a, oh, Betelgeuse. Oh, that sounds interesting. What does it mean? Betelgeuse. Oh, so what's the funny, well, it's funny spelling because it's Arabic, but it's also armpit. So that's something to know. So I've got Alpha Centauri, you know, the Harry Potter, Sirius Scorcher, then armpit. Oh my God. That's a bit sad. And then next you go up to the Rigel, which is a blue giant. And that goes also in Orion. And Rigel, if that's armpit, they say, well, what does the Rigel mean? Rigel means left foot. Okay, Rigel. And you think, oh, that's not much. That makes the stars a bit more accessible. Now, Rigel is interesting. That's at 8,100 petameters away. So it's still fairly close, but that's a blue giant. So these are large stars which are still burning hydrogen in a particular way. But Rigel's not three stars, but one star, no. Not three stars, not two stars. How many stars? Well, it's five stars. So Rigel is a system of five stars. And if you have even a reasonably good telescope, you look at it and there you've got five stars. And that's an important thing to know about. And this is an important thing to know. And so you've got this story you can say about these five stars at one point in space. So in terms of dimensionality, you've got the commercial thing, you've got probably cups and t-shirts and the sign. Then you've got the link, hopefully, somewhere up in the Blue Mountain. I've become aware that I have such small penetration in ideas, I can actually just put it out there and just keep on pumping away and hoping things will go. There's that limit. Then you've got the C2 dimension, the 1 to a trillion thing, which is at 1 to a million million scale. What that tells you, and the mapping of that to local regions. It's the ability to start to place information not in a textbook, but in a scale to our actual Earth. And then in it you have the dimension, yet a name, of naming, the human aspect of it, going back in history, and the fact that these stars, well, Rigel's always been the same, but Sirius moving, that things are going to change about it, and various stars may explode at various points in time. Now, Betelgeuse is the size, easily the size of the solar system. It's a red giant. So that's interesting coming up here. And so Sirius is Betelgeuse is a red giant there. So that will change, and there's a name for it. And then Rigel is the blue, so you automatically start to hop around the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, and start to look at these various things, and you can actually see, well, how do I see the speed of stars? Well, one is the historical records, but the other one is basically the same principle as a policeman's speed radar. We can actually track them like that. So there's all these different dimensions that you can slowly get at. And the theory is that if you're locked out of the classroom and education system, it's going to take a time to build your way through and to build your assets across, and it just requires gently knocking on doors and seeing which ones are slammed in your face and how quickly, hearing the actual, using the echo of the slam to actually deduce what's behind the door. And the problem is that with any amateur things where you essentially are looking for one process, so you want to have some, like you're a restaurant serving food, you don't want tips on how to cook food from your customers. It's a one-way street. So if you're out there educating it, there is this system for the education to go through. So really, this is sort of offering a pop-up snack stall of information. So just to recap, there's the Einstein pendulum, which I'm working on, but also this roadmap. And to get the roadmap, the key thing, I suppose, is the observing what road signs look like, taking pictures what they look like, using the dropper function to actually take actual colours off actual road signs, and then looking at the font conventions and alignment conventions and the colouring conventions and actually mapping things across. And of course, it's all over Red Rover just by getting the road sign font and installing it on your computer. Now, I hope this is worthwhile, that I can pick up someone else doing something equally as wacky. But I just really hope that I can get this through, that once people see the C2, just having enough threads in it, what a PM stands for as opposed to a KM. That was a important thing in terms of scale. Also having a system of scale systems or convenience systems, which I've worked on, but you can't really publish a neat idea. You've got to actually reduce it to practice and commercialise it. So I hope I'm there. I'm now really, it's quite humid and hot here in Australia. I'm going up the slope. I'm halfway through, but I'll take a break and then do my next podcast on axion nerve, molecular physics of axion transmissions. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.